on VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. U.S. President Joe Biden announced more than $8 billion in additional aid to Ukraine during a visit by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to Washington on Thursday. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner reports.
We have a strong security agreement with the United States, and we are grateful for it, and we will fully implement it.
The aid will include the first shipment of a precision-guided glide bomb, a medium-range missile that gives Ukraine a major weapons upgrade.
Mr. President, can you bring an end to this war?
Of course we have to.
Earlier, Zelensky was at the Capitol to meet with Democratic and Republican lawmakers. The Ukrainian president has faced rising criticism from some Republican leaders, including presidential candidate Donald Trump. Trump said he would meet with Zelensky on Friday in New York. This after telling a campaign rally in North Carolina this week, quote, "We continue to give billions of dollars to a man who refused to make a deal. In the 2.5 years since Russia began its full-scale invasion, Congress has approved nearly $175 billion of aid and military assistance for Ukraine and allied nations. Many lawmakers say they expect Washington will need to approve more money to help Kyiv within the next several months."
Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Thursday Israel will continue striking Hezbollah with full force, dimming hopes for a ceasefire. Hundreds have been killed in Lebanon this week as Israel dramatically escalated strikes, saying it is targeting Hezbollah's military capacities. Israeli leaders say they are determined to stop more than 11 months of cross-border fire by the militant group. This is VOA News. U.S. prosecutors charged New York City Mayor Eric Adams on Thursday with bribery, wire fraud, conspiracy, and accepting illegal campaign contributions. Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener reports.
Manhattan's top federal prosecutor, Damian Williams, detailed a years-long scheme alleging Adams received improper valuable benefits from Turkish nationals in exchange for pressuring city officials to allow Turkey's new consulate to open despite safety concerns.
The mayor sought and accepted well over $100,000 in luxury travel benefits from some of the same foreign actors who arranged many of the illegal campaign contributions.
Adams said he would fight the charges in court and denied any wrongdoing. Adams is New York City's first mayor to be criminally charged while in office.
Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener. With violent gangs controlling most of Haiti's capital, Port-au-Prince, the calls for a formal UN peacekeeping mission are growing. The country's prime minister says the current international effort lacks resources, manpower, and the capability to face the gangs. Celia Mendoza reports from the United Nations in New York.
The UN-backed multinational security support mission has provided Haiti with 400 police officers from Kenya, nearly a dozen police and soldiers from Jamaica, and two senior military officers from Belize. But that's a fraction of the more than 3,100 troops that a group of about 10 countries have pledged. Haitian Prime Minister Gary Conil.
As long as I still have people in camps, as long as the Haitians cannot go north or south, as long as I have over 14 neighborhoods controlled by gangs, I will never be satisfied with anything. We have to do better.
Conil spoke with VOA on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly. The UN Security Council is set to vote on September 30th on whether to renew the current mission's mandate. Celia Mendoza, VOA News, United Nations.
The Argentine Government Statistics Agency said on Thursday the official poverty rate in Argentina jumped to about 53% during the first 6 months of Javier Milei's presidency. The rise from about 42% reflects the pain of the most intense austerity program in Argentina's modern history. Foreign investors and the International Monetary Fund have backed Milei's fiscal shock therapy after decades of reckless spending that caused the country to default on its debts multiple times. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, September 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenyan President Ruto asked for more funding for peacekeeping in Haiti and Africa.
The progress so far in Haiti demonstrates that what was once deemed mission impossible is indeed a present and undeniable possibility.
Sudan's military leader blames the RSF and supporting countries for atrocities in the country's conflict. Doctors Without Borders appeals for more aid for Sudan. We'll have analysis of week three at the 79th session of the UN General Assembly. Reporters Without Borders call for protecting community radios in the Sahel. Development experts call for empowering African women mine workers to boost sustainable trade and economic growth.
We seek to empower women in mining by advocating for equal access to resources, opportunities, and leadership roles across the continent.
And the view of the U.S. gun owners remain unchanged by the assassination attempts against former President Donald Trump. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenyan President William Ruto says his country's commitment to international peace and security is unwavering. Speaking Thursday at the 79th session of the UN General Assembly, Ruto touted Kenya's peacekeeping role in Somalia, Haiti, and its involvement with South Sudan to mine a peace initiative. He called for more international support to troop-contributing countries to complete the job in Haiti.
Following the Security Council's authorization under Resolution 2699, Kenya has deployed 382 specially trained police officers to Haiti. Just a few days ago, I had the opportunity to visit Haiti, witness the work of our officers in the field, and observe remarkable progress on the ground. Our support for the Haitian National Police has significantly advanced the pacification of cities and towns, protected critical infrastructure, and relieved many communities previously held captive by criminal gangs. I also commend Haiti's political leadership for forging an agreement and a promising roadmap towards free, fair, and democratic elections. We are deeply grateful for the financial and logistical support from the United States, Canada, and other member states that are shouldering this heavy burden. This has been critical to the MSS's deployment thus far. However, Kenya and other Caribbean and African countries are ready to deploy, but are hindered by insufficient equipment, logistics, and funding. I appeal to all member states to stand in solidarity with the people of Haiti by providing necessary support, either directly to MSS contributing countries or through the UN Trust Fund. I must emphasize, however, that Kenya will deploy the additional contingent towards attaining the target of all the 2,500 police officers by January next year. The progress so far in Haiti demonstrates that what was once deemed mission impossible is indeed a present and undeniable possibility.
That's Kenyan President William Ruto speaking Thursday when he was addressed the 79th session of the UN General Assembly. An analyst says he believes Kenya has a strong reason to ask the international community to finance its peacekeeping effort, especially in Haiti, where he says there has been a breakdown of law and order. Samir Shihata is the Associate Professor of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of Oklahoma.
Well, I think President Ruto is leveraging Kenya's important role and willingness to send peacekeepers to Haiti. So far, over 300, with many more promised. And of course, everyone knows in the Western Hemisphere that Haiti has experienced extreme difficulty. Not only is it the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, but there's been tremendous insecurity, lawlessness, really the absence of the state. So the peacekeepers are very much needed. And I think the president is trying to leverage that help and goodwill to secure assistance with support for UN and AU, African Union peacekeepers, closer to home in difficult situations in Africa that directly impinge upon Kenya and other countries, including in Somalia. So I think he has a strong basis to ask for support from the international community.
Do you think there's the will from the international community to provide the necessary funding that President Ruto is asking for?
I think some funding will be forthcoming, but of course, as everyone knows, there are so many at the current moment international crises that involve horrific violence, whether it is Gaza, Lebanon, Ukraine, or Sudan. So there is a great deal of attention focused to this really unprecedented level of war and conflict going on right now. So it will be difficult to get attention and resources, but I do think because of Kenya's willingness to help with the Haiti crisis, that he will receive some support.
Samashi Hata is Associate Professor of Middle Eastern Studies at the University of Oklahoma. He was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. Sudan's military leader, General Abdel Fattah el-Burhan, says that Sudan will uphold international law and protect civilians in its war with the Rapid Support Forces, the RSF, addressing the 79th session of the UN General Assembly through an interpreter on Thursday. General al-Burhan blamed the paramilitary group for starting the conflict and refusing to end it with the support of some regional countries that, he says, are providing funding and weapons.
Sudan is facing very serious challenges, and in fact, a war is being waged by a group that has rebelled against the state for many years. It's receiving political and logistical support at the local and regional levels. You've all witnessed the crimes, the violations, and the atrocities committed by these rebels, targeting the Sudanese people and the Sudanese state. The war began with an attempt to seize power through force. With time, it's transformed into a total war against the Sudanese state and the Sudanese people. Countless crimes have been committed, ethnic cleansing, forced displacement, and genocide. All of this has been committed by the Rapid Support Forces, the RSF, which should be considered a terrorist group. This militia is continuing to perpetrate crimes, and it is most unfortunate that it is receiving the support of some states in the region, states which are providing funding and mercenaries for their own political and economic benefit in flagrant violation of law and international will. Ladies and gentlemen, this devastating aggression being waged by the RSF with the support of states in the region providing funding and mercenaries as well as weapons to the RSF have resulted in deaths of dozens of thousands of Sudanese and the displacement of many, many millions more. As a result, we've been seeking a peaceful solution to the situation, and the Jeddah Declaration, dated May 2023, should have been enough to put an end to this war. And yet, regional political players who are in favor of the war have a different take on the situation. This has resulted in the situation we have on our hands to date.
Sudan's military leader, General Abdel Fattah el-Burhan, addressing the 79th session of the UN General Assembly through an interpreter on Thursday. Medecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, also known as Doctors Without Borders, has urged world leaders to scale up relief in Sudan. Dr. Tamar Aludat, the president of MSF's International Board in the Netherlands, made the calls on Wednesday at a United Nations General Assembly high-level ministerial event. VOA's Douglas Mpuga has this report.
In his address at the United Nations General Assembly high-level ministerial event, Dr. Tamar Aludat reminded his audience of the warning his humanitarian organization made last year that without concrete steps to dramatically improve humanitarian access and the protection of civilians in Sudan, a catastrophe was imminent.
Here we are a year on, and while many speakers today talk about their achievements and philanthropy, our collective failure couldn't be clearer. The crisis in Sudan has reached a critical point. As Médecins Sans Frontières continues to provide medical services across the country, we face enormous challenges.
He said humanitarian access continues to be obstructed by both warring parties and violence against civilians, and health care continues unabated. Health facilities, he added, have been shelled, looted, and occupied, and healthcare workers are attacked, harassed, and intimidated. Dr. Haldat emphasized that there was a need to streamline processes to expedite the movement of aid.
We demand that all parties to the conflict protect civilians and halt attacks on health infrastructure, ensure the safety of medical and humanitarian personnel. Finally, the international community must scale up the delivery of humanitarian assistance. We need to streamline processes to expedite the movement of aid. We need humanitarian organizations to manage risk, to ensure their presence, and predictably move supplies across the country, including food, vaccines, and medical supplies. The cost of inaction is already unbearable. It can be measured in the tens of thousands of lives lost and the millions of lives that are on the line as we speak. The Sudanese people cannot afford for us to have this same conversation again next year.
The UN on Wednesday also warned that relentless hostilities across Sudan have brought misery to millions of civilians, triggering the world's fastest growing displacement crisis. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, September 27th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The Paris-based press watchdog Reporters Without Borders has teamed up with more than 500 community radio stations across the Sahel in calling for the protection and support of local radio broadcasters, which in some places are under increasing attack. Lisa Bryan has more from the French capital.
This spot in Hausa by Reporters Without Borders, or RSF, has been replicated in four other languages widely spoken across the Sahel. It calls on governments in the region to guarantee the security of local radio stations and their right to inform freely across the region. It also calls for shedding light on the fate of journalists who have been attacked in recent months.
Our fear is if we don't organize ourselves, if we don't appeal and call on the political authorities, there will be no longer community radio stations in Sahel.
That's Sadibou Marong, RSF's Sub-Sahara Africa Bureau Director. He spoke from Bamako, Mali, where this appeal was launched. Mali, along with Niger, Burkina Faso, and Chad, are countries where community radios are especially vulnerable.
They have always played a crucial role so as to inform and sensitize populations. They have also been using local language, and local languages are extremely important.
Many of Sahel's community or local radio stations were launched in the 1990s. They cover issues like farming, health, and the environment that are key for local populations. But in several Sahel countries where terrorists and other armed groups are active, RSF says the stations and their journalists are increasingly under attack. Over the past year, for example, two journalists were killed in Chad and Mali. Two others were kidnapped. Assailants have also destroyed radio stations or pressured them to broadcast their propaganda. Anne Bokambe, RSF's editorial head in Paris, says Sahel's community radios are critical for other reasons. Many international media have been forced to leave the Sahel. Disinformation is spreading, including by foreign groups like Russian mercenaries. There's a danger that parts of the Sahel may become black holes in terms of information. Lisa Bryant, VOA News, Paris.
Mining experts say adopting responsible mining practices and empowering women mine workers is crucial to unlocking sustainable trade and fostering inclusive economic growth in Africa. The Women in Mining Africa organization is calling on stakeholders to ensure safe, accountable, and equitable mining sector. Women dominate the mining sector but have limited access to credit, healthcare, and education. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
as a global race to acquire economically vital minerals and funds, those working in Africa's mining sector are calling for the protection of women and children laborers who keep it running. Women in Mining Africa, an advocacy group that aims to mitigate harsh working conditions in rural communities, organized a virtual meeting this week with organizations and experts. They are working to promote gender equity and social justice in the mining sector as demand for African resources continues. Comfort Asokoro Ogaji founded Women in Mining Africa, which works in 36 African countries.
We seek to empower women in mining by advocating for equal access to resources, opportunities, and leadership roles across the continent. We also work to promote responsible mining, to advocate for sustainable and ethical and also socially inclusive mining practices.
The World Bank says women represent 30% of the artisanal and small-scale mining industry. However, women are often barred from entering the mines and relegated to lower-paying jobs. According to the International Institute for Sustainable Development, women's contributions are overshadowed by the historically dominant role of men, hindering women's meaningful participation and resulting in unequal pay. Women, unlike their male counterparts, also face gender inequality, violence and harassment. Eos Timor works as a senior advisor at Levin Sources, a consulting firm that drives the transition to just and sustainable minerals value chains. Timor has worked with artisanal and small-scale miners in the Democratic Republic of Congo. She says the management of mining fields has improved over the years.
I've seen the mentality change towards artisanal mining, where we slowly started to talk about artisanal management plans around the possibility for peaceful coexistence. And now working at Levin Sources, we very regularly receive requests from mining companies, industrial mining companies, to help them set up ASM management plans that range from peaceful coexistence to collaboration.
Mining experts say miners are being empowered, receiving different ways to sustain their livelihood and undergoing safety training. The small-scale miners also have been able to obtain loans to purchase equipment that ease their work, increase their product and their income. The report also calls for changing property laws and land tenure agreements. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump has been the target of two assassination attempts during this campaign. VOA spoke with some gun owners who said the shootings have not changed their views on gun laws. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has our story.
Keep walking!
Law enforcement prevent an assassination attempt against former President Donald Trump, detaining a suspect with a rifle at a Florida golf course earlier this month. That follows a separate shooter wounding Trump at a Pennsylvania campaign rally in July. VOA asked gun owners how the attempted assassinations affect their views on gun control in this election. Matthew Gonzalez says he was shocked by Trump's shooting, but that all Americans have the right to protect themselves.
Any bad person can get a hand on a gun. It's very, very accessible. You just got to know a couple people, and it's not hard. It's that people make it out to be. And it's always going to happen. That's why you have to just watch out for yourself.
Gun rights advocate Nick Clark told VOA the assassination attempts reaffirm how firearms protect regular citizens as well as the president.
The Secret Service is armed, and the Secret Service, who protects the president, saw the person or saw the gun pointed through a line of shrubs. You don't have to have every single person carrying a gun, but if you had more people carrying a gun for self-defense, these criminals would think twice.
But most Americans say it's too easy to get a gun in this country and favor stricter gun laws, according to the Pew Research Center. Every 11 minutes, somebody dies from gun violence in the United States, notes Milwaukee-based gun violence prevention researcher Mallory O'Brien.
Young people, 1 to 17, leading cause of death for them is firearms. We right now have the highest level of gun suicides that we've ever had in our country.
She says more thorough background checks and other measures could help. But Wisconsin indoor shooting range co-owner Cheryl Repholz favors enforcing existing gun laws instead of imposing new ones.
You can see the display of firearms behind me.
and they're inanimate objects. They're just sitting there resting. Gun owners, we don't use them for felonies. We are responsible gun owners.
Authorities say the weapon used in Trump's first assassination attempt appears to have been purchased legally. The second suspect appeared in court this week, charged with possession of a firearm as a convicted felon and possession of a firearm with an obliterated serial number. Veronica Banderas Iglesias, VOA News, Mequon, Wisconsin.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with football. The Confederation of African Football has confirmed that Kenya, Uganda and Tanzania are co-hosts of the CAF African Nations Championship 2025. The African Nations Championship will be played between the 1st and the 28th of February 2025. The host stadiums and training venues will be confirmed in due course. The road to Kenya, Uganda and Tanzania will kick off with the first round of qualifiers on the weekend of the 25th to the 27th of October 2024 and the 1st to the 13th of November 2024. Staying with football news, the Nigerian Football Federation has said that Augustine Iguavion will retain his position as the interim coach of the Super Eagles. The appointment followed a recommendation from the NFF's Technical and Development Subcommittee. The 58-year-old, in temporary charge of the squad he had led three times previously, steered the three-time African champions to a 3-0 defeat of Benin Republic and a scoreless draw with Rwanda in match days 1 and 2 earlier this month. Coach Iguavion, who previously served as the NFF's technical director, will now lead the national team in their upcoming 2025 Africa Cup of Nations qualifying matches against Libya, set for next month. In rugby news, South Africa national rugby team, the Springboks, will host Argentina in the 2024 Rugby Championship final on Saturday in Nesperth. The top of the table clash is the second of the two meetings between the Springboks and Los Palmas in 2024. The Springboks require one competition point from the match to secure the Rugby Championship title. It will be their first since 2019. Springboks' Courtly Andrese expect the Rugby Championship final to be busier than usual.
Yeah, we know that they like to run the ball, and I think we expect them to do the same this weekend. And I think we will be up for it, and just rectify where we did wrong last weekend.
In basketball news, the 2024 FIBA Africa Youth Camp, a collaboration between FIBA Africa and the National Basketball Association, the NBA, will take place in Douala, Cameroon and Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. The 2 4-day camps will provide young athletes born in 2008 and 2009, along with their coaches, the opportunity to benefit from top-level training. The program will focus on improving both individual and team skills while promoting essential values such as teamwork, hard work and commitment. The FIBA youth camps are part of FIBA Africa's development program and have impacted 80% of African countries since 2021. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, September 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV show, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.
Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres in March called on member states to eradicate sexual exploitation and abuse from workplace, support victims, and hold perpetrators and their enablers to account. We focus specifically on sexual harassment by hearing individual testimonies and examine research and analysis by African scholars on the subject of sexual harassment.
Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice.